seen a king or beast with quite so little hair.
I'm gonna be the main event like the king was before. I'm brushing up on looking down. I'm working on my
roar. And thus far, a rather an inspiring thing.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king.
Do you remember the story of a girl who lived a life of cinders? And how she found true love because she kept a beautiful dream in her heart. Of course, it helped that she had mouse friends who could sew and a fairy godmother who could do wonders with pumpkins. Well, that girl is me.
What a perfectly perfect life. It's a fairy tale come true. I'm a princess and a wife, all because I fit a shoe. When I dreamed of love. Oh, what a wonderfully perfectly perfect year.
Before their fairy tale wedding, not everything was perfectly perfect for Kate and William. The couple split up at least half a dozen times over 8 years. Kate was even dubbed Waity Katie by the British tabloids as she waited patiently for her prince to pop the question. When William publicly dumped her in 2007, his aristocratic fraternity pals called her the practice chick. After years of splits, reconciliations, and will-they-won't-they speculation, William finally slid a ring onto Kate's finger. It was the used ring that belonged to his deceased mother, the same ring she wore during her doomed and loveless marriage to William's two-timing father, Prince Charles. William, on the other hand, refused to wear a wedding band and stayed as ringless as a bachelor. A husband's refusal to wear a wedding band is a big no-no for most women. How committed and in love can he be, they ask, if he won't even show off the fact that he's married? Even if their 8-year on-again-off-again relationship wasn't perfectly perfect, at least their fairy tale wedding would be perfectly perfect. The couple set their wedding date for April 29, 2011. Coincidentally, it was the exact same day as Hitler's wedding day, and it marked the 66th anniversary of Hitler's marriage to Eva Braun.
And to watch U.S. television fawning, Fox, CNN, CBS, all of them. Oh, it's so wonderful. No one in America can wait until next week, the way they're hyping it.
1 week until the royal wedding. This is exciting stuff. I mean, it's hard to, I mean, the energy is just palpable.
Young couples get married, they're just hoping that some bank will be nice enough to give them a mortgage.
Yeah.
These folks have a number of palaces to pick from.
NBC News is launching a free royal wedding app for the iPad. Got a...
This is truly a love story that captures everybody's attention.
This goes back to Edward Bernays 100 years ago saying, look, to make politicians and royalty popular, we'll have Hollywood stars come to banquets and events with them. We'll have music stars. We'll have other people go there to basically make these elites be seen as celebrities themselves.
On TV screens around the globe, billions watched as the ringless William twisted, squeezed, and fumbled a gold wedding ring onto Kate's finger, but denied her the same honor. Every flag-waving commoner wanted a royal souvenir that they could take home and cherish forever and ever. Well, maybe not forever and ever. The royal condom souvenir probably won't last forever and ever.
Kate and William, the comic book? That's right. Now alongside Spider-Man and Archie, you can find the royal couple.
Yes, everything was perfectly perfect until the balcony kiss that royal wedding watchers waited for breathlessly. That magical moment was stolen by a 3-year-old flower girl, whose sour expression cast a giant shadow over the royal kiss. The flower girl is the daughter of Lady Rose Astor, and she is also Prince William's goddaughter. Kate finally bent down and whispered something like, "Put on a happy face and get used to it. You're ruining everything." Why is the pouting flower girl important enough to be named Prince William's goddaughter? Because she's an Astor. Fritz Springmeier identifies the Astors as one of the 13 satanic bloodlines who made billions from opium, slave trading, and loan sharking. His book gives reference documentation of their criminal history. Many within these unsavory power circles were on the wedding guest list, like James Rothschild of the Rothschild Bankster dynasty. James Rothschild brought along his passed-around girlfriend, Astrid Harbord, who, according to the tabloids, had previously shagged Prince Harry. Also on the guest list was Gary Goldsmith, Kate's uncle. The tabloids report that Uncle Gary is a filthy, rich, cocaine-snorting, pill-popping, porn-peddling, foul-mouthed, randy, hedonistic playboy. Here's Kate's uncle at the wedding, popping pills with his female escort. Uncle Gary Goldsmith is the younger brother of Kate's mother, Carol Goldsmith. Kate's Uncle Gary was filmed covertly by undercover reporters for the UK's News of the World at his sprawling $10 million villa on the Spanish party island of Ibiza. He named his villa Maison de Bang Bang, which is French slang for House of Sex. Guarded by MI6 agents, Prince William and his bride-to-be holidayed, partied, and yachted at Uncle Gary Goldsmith's House of Bang Bang in 2006. The undercover reporters reported that Kate's Uncle Gary entertains his guests with hardcore porn on a massive 52-inch screen. He supplies pot, cocaine, ecstasy, hookers, and door-to-door delivery. Does anyone really believe that William and Kate just held hands and sipped tea on their Bang Bang holiday? And speaking of uncles, which uncle is slimier, Kate's Uncle Gary or William's Uncle Andrew? Prince Andrew is the brother of William's father, Charles, and the son of Queen Elizabeth. He is the fourth in line to the British throne. Andrew, who was also a featured guest at William's wedding, has been exposed in the news as a client of Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein is a convicted pedophile who served up underage girls to Prince Andrew like lollipops. Epstein also gave Andrew $30,000 to help pay for his ex-wife Fergie's massive debts that she was blackmailing him for. Andrew was finally forced to step down as Britain's trade ambassador because of, number one, his criminal behavior with underage girls, two, a $6 million tax evasion charge, and three, conflicts of interest from friendships with a convicted pedophile and with Libyan leader Gaddafi's son, whose country was being bombed by the British military.
Mr. Chris Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Given the circumstances that the Prime Minister describes, isn't it increasingly difficult to explain the behaviour of the UKTI Special Ambassador for Trade, who is not only a very close friend of Saif Gaddafi, but is also a close friend of the convicted Libyan gun smuggler Tariq Kaituri? Isn't it time we dispensed with the services of the Duke of York?
References to members of the royal family should be very rare, very sparing, and very respectful. We order, order.
Despite their criminal activities, neither of William and Kate's sleazy uncles have ever been arrested or prosecuted for their crimes. They are above the law. Okay, so two rotten apples in the newlyweds' family doesn't make them all rotten. William's brother Harry isn't such a bad bloke, is he? It can't be easy being the carrot-top younger brother and second fiddle to the perfectly perfect William, who is destined to be king. It can't be easy wondering why you look so much like James Hewitt, the man your mother publicly admitted that she cheated with while Charles was cheating with Camilla.
Diana confessed her affair with Raffish Hewitt in an interview with the programme Panorama.
Did your relationship go beyond a close friendship?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Were you unfaithful?
Yes, I adored him. Yes, I was in love with him.
It can't be easy hearing your real father admit that the royal family threatened to kill him.
Were they threatening?
Yes, they were. Inasmuch as they said that it was not conducive to my health to continue the relationship.
James Hewitt says he also received warnings from Diana's personal police protection officers and members of the royal household. He says that he even had a conversation with a member of the royal family.
It can't be easy hearing news reports that your mother slept around with lots of men. Barry Manicky, David Waterhouse, James Gilby, James Hewitt, Oliver Hoare, William Carling, Dr. Hasnain Khan, rock star Bryan Adams, and Muslim playboy Dodi Al-Fayed. Worst of all was the rumor that your mother got knocked up by Dodi Al-Fayed and that your family murdered her because she was an embarrassment to the crown. Harry has a lot to be angry about. It's understandable that he acted out his anger and got caught by the paparazzi drinking, drugging, brawling, groping breasts, and making racist comments about dark-skinned people. What's not so understandable is why Harry wore a Nazi uniform and a swastika armband to an upscale dress party in 2006. The news was a reminder of the royal family's links to Hitler's Nazi party, which they've tried so hard to cover up. Prince Philip is William and Harry's grandfather and the Queen's husband. He married the Queen in 1947 and changed his German name from Philip Battenberg to Philip Mountbatten to cover up his German identity.
The so-called royal family which triumphed is basically German. They are seated on almost every throne in Europe. They are the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha-Battenberg bloodline, which often intermarries with the Hesse-Cassel German nobility and claim Jewish descent from the royal house of David in ancient Israel. They raise their children without love or compassion, breeding each successive generation to be at the head of a military establishment who keep an angered peace by use of fear, surveillance, and war. Contrary to what the royal spin doctors have written in the school history books, Queen Victoria was not popular. She was often hissed in public, and there were no less than 7 attempts to kill her. Keeping the populace ignorant, using adults and children alike as virtual slaves in workhouses, providing no adequate protection against hypothermia, working every man and woman to exhaustion, and imposing a crippling poll tax was the modus operandi of Queen Victoria and all her relatives sitting on the thrones across Europe. So-called Victorian values allowed children to be used as slave labor. Inhumane slums and widespread poverty was common across the whole of Europe right up until the 1970s.
Both of Philip's sisters married high-ranking German officers in the Nazi Party. His sister Sophie married Nazi SS Colonel Christoph von Hess, chief of Hermann Göring's secret intelligence service. Prince Philip's German uncle, Lord Louis Mountbatten, was a central figure in secret communications between the British royal family and their pro-Hitler cousins in Germany. The authors of War of the Windsors state that Lord Louis Mountbatten had the nickname Dickie, and for good reason. Philip's uncle Dickie was the last viceroy in India, where he was a known pedophile who sexually exploited young working-class Indian peasant boys. Another book, The Kinkora Scandal, connects Lord Dickie Mountbatten to a child prostitution vice ring in Belfast, Ireland. Authorities failed to intervene at the Kinkora care home for boys until 1981, despite reports over the years of child sexual abuse. The operators of the Kinkora child prostitution ring were eventually convicted in 1981 of the ritual sexual abuse of defenseless young boys who were sold like prostitutes. No charges were ever brought against the VIP customers of royals, politicians, lawyers, and judges. Belfast citizens finally had reason to celebrate when Prince Philip's pedophile uncle was killed by an IRA bomb planted in his boat.
Lord Mountbatten was 79 years old on August 27, 1979, a day he set sail for a pleasure cruise in the Shadow 5, his 27-foot runabout.
Only about 10 minutes after they set off, there was a tremendous explosion.
The boat seemed to lift off the surface of the water before it splintered into a million whirling pieces. Bodies, oil, and blood rained down to float upon the water.
Lord Mountbatten's grandson, Nicholas, and the boat boy were both dead, floating face down in the water. Lord Mountbatten himself had both of his legs nearly torn off by the blast, and he was still alive, but he died very shortly thereafter in the boat that rescued him.
Lord Louis was, of course, accorded a magnificent funeral in Westminster Abbey, where he lay in state for days before his final burial and interment. One of the British tabloids said simply on the banner headline, "These evil bastards."
What kind of childhood did the Queen's German husband, Prince Philip, have? The answer can be found in a biographical book called Elizabeth, Behind Palace Doors. Philip's mother was Princess Alice Battenberg, granddaughter of Queen Victoria. She was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic and committed to a mental institution in Switzerland. Philip's German father ran off with a wealthy mistress, which left the boy parentless. Philip's uncle, George Mountbatten, became his surrogate father and legal guardian. Unfortunately, Uncle George had the same perverse reputation as Uncle Dickie. George Mountbatten kept a scandalous collection of child pornography that he bound into volumes and emblazoned with the family crest. Most disturbing were pictures of family orgies and bestiality in which children and animals were sexual participants. The question is, was George's adopted son Philip a participant? George Mountbatten's porn collection now resides at the British Museum, where it is kept in a hidden repository of artifacts deemed pornographic and unfit for public viewing. It is a well-known fact that child victims of sexual predators commonly identify with their abusers and grow up to become sexual predators themselves. Like her husband, Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth came from a royal family of name changers, and for precisely the same reason, to cover up their German identity. Before 1917, the British royals bore the German name of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which was changed to the more British-sounding name of Windsor. The Queen and Philip are both the great-great-grandchildren of Queen Victoria, who married her German first cousin. That makes Elizabeth and Philip inbred kissing cousins. According to genetic researchers, marrying your relatives is not a very good idea, and here's why. When it comes to inbreeding horror stories, the Ozark Mountain families are no match for the royals. The Queen's first cousins, Nerissa and Catherine Bowes Lyon, were severely mentally handicapped and incarcerated in a state-run asylum in 1941. Cousin Nerissa is now deceased, but the Queen's look-alike cousin Catherine is still alive. She's mentally retarded, neglected, and never visited. The Queen also has three second cousins who were sent to the same mental hospital on exactly the same day as Catherine and Nerissa. Burke's Peerage is a prestigious directory that records the who's who lineage of the British aristocracy. It falsely recorded that the Queen's first cousins, Nerissa and Catherine, died in 1940 and 1961.
Every family has secrets they would rather the world not know, even the most famous of them all. At every family occasion over the past 70 years, two of the Queen's cousins have been absent from the feast, declared dead to family and society.
We were sworn to secrecy. This is something that we didn't talk about.
All the staff were put on, you know, be quiet, don't say anything.
For decades, the cousins remained hidden in an institution for so-called mental defectives.
It just seemed a waste of life. But this way, I couldn't put a child of mine into a place like that, whatever they was going to be like.
Many thousands of others, condemned as idiots and imbeciles, shared their fate and were hidden out of sight and out of mind.
In those days, people weren't interested in learning disability people. They were just put there because of shame.
But the royal secret was exposed.
Afternoon, ladies. Nice to see you all.
A private investigator's hidden camera revealed the truth.
Where's Catherine? Somebody said I should have a word with her this afternoon.
Catherine Bowes Lyon, niece to the Queen Mother and cousin to the Queen, is still alive today. Sheila Rule had cared for Nerissa and Catherine for over a decade and was one of the few to attend Nerissa's funeral.
Well, at Nerissa's funeral, there was no family present. It was only staff. And Catherine went. She didn't cry or anything, but she was quiet. She was quiet. Of course, she must feel like there's something not right.
There was no connection with the royalty, and that's no credit to them. They could have given her a very lavish funeral, really, but they didn't. And she had a pauper's grave.
The Queen hasn't parted with a single penny to care for her look-alike living cousin Catherine. No birthday gift, no Christmas card, not a single visit from the Queen or royal family in 60 years. Nerissa and Catherine are not the only mentally defective relatives of the Queen. The Queen's great-uncle, Prince Albert Victor, was mildly retarded and partially deaf. He was also a suspect in the murderous rape of slum prostitutes using a carving knife. The Queen's grandfather, King George V, had an epileptic son. When the boy suffered an epileptic seizure at age 4, the King hid him in an isolated farmhouse. The boy never saw his royal parents again and reportedly died in his sleep. King George III was the Queen's third great-grandfather. Because of his prolonged episodes of severe psychosis, he was put in a straitjacket behind bars at Windsor Castle, where he became progressively insane and blind. Queen Anne and George IV inherited the same genetic madness. The Queen's mother-in-law, Alice Battenberg, had visions that she was Christ's bride. She was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic and committed to an asylum in 1930. Alice is Prince William's great-grandmother. Hollywood and the palace spin doctors invest millions in propaganda movies that rewrite history to make the world forget the crimes, cruelty, madness, and the heartless past of the British royals. The Oscar-winning movie, The Queen, was all about resuscitating the Queen's dying popularity after Diana's murder. Another propaganda Oscar winner, The King's Speech, focused on the Queen's father, King George VI, and his speech impediment. The movie failed to mention royal inbreeding as a cause of his disability. Monarchy movies sell the belief that the royals are sensitive, caring, human, and deserving of worship and taxpayer support. In mid-October of 1964, kissing cousins Elizabeth and Philip paid a royal visit to a Catholic residential school for Aboriginal children in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. William Coombs was 12 years old at the time of the royal visit. "I was an inmate at the Kamloops school when we were visited," said Coombs. "I remember it was strange because they came by themselves. No big fanfare or nothing. but I recognized them, and the school principal told us it was the Queen. And we all got given new clothes and good food for the first time in months the day before she arrived. The day the Queen got to the school, I was part of a group of kids that went on a picnic with her and her husband and some of the priests. We went down to a meadow near Dead Man's Creek. I remember it was weird because we all had to bend down and kiss her foot, and she was wearing a white lace boot. After a while, I saw the Queen and her husband leave the picnic with 10 children from the school, and those kids never returned. They took away those 10 kids and nobody ever saw them again. We never heard anything more about them, and we never met them again, even when we were older. They were all from around there, but they all vanished. The group that disappeared was 7 boys and 3 girls in age from 6 to 14 years old. They were all from the smart group in the class. 2 of the boys were brothers, and they were Mady from Quesnel. Their last name was Arnous, or Arnold. I don't remember the others, just an occasional first name like Cecilia, and there was an Edward. What happened was also witnessed by my friend, George Adolf, who was 11 years old at the time and a student there too. But he's dead now. William Coombs, the sole survivor, was scheduled to appear as the star witness at the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State in London, England. But William Coombs never made it to the tribunal. He died of unknown causes shortly before he was scheduled to testify. Reverend Kevin Annett, a former minister of the United Church of Canada, believes that William Coombs was murdered to stop him from speaking out about the royal abductions and other crimes of murder and torture that he had witnessed at the school.
In a nutshell, what happened was I was letting people speak from the pulpit about the crimes I'd seen in the residential school, the murders and that. I also found out about the land deals that were happening where the church was selling off native land of big logging companies for kickbacks. And I wrote a letter about that to the church. I was fired without cause and eventually thrown out of the church without any due process at all. But that one thing led to another, and I began to work a lot more with the survivors after that, the eyewitnesses to these crimes.
The Queen and Philip's trip to Canada isn't the only shopping trip they took in the 1960s. In 1961, the couple went on another shopping spree, not for children this time, but for tigers and elephants. Only a few short months before Prince Philip launched the World Wildlife Fund, he landed in Jaipur, India, with the Queen. The royal pair slipped into matching safari jackets and journeyed into India's Rajashran jungle. A Bengal tiger was lured into the crosshairs of Philip's hunting rifle by tying a group of goats together as prey.
Oh, by Jove, that's a big fellow!
Philip shot and killed the defenseless animal, which is on the endangered species list and is facing extinction. Ian MacPhail, the World Wildlife Fund's first international appeals director, told a British TV crew that Philip shot and killed a mother elephant while her orphan calf ran off in terror. Prince Philip co-founded the World Wildlife Fund in 1961 with former Nazi SS officer Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. Bernhard also helped found the Bilderberg Group of politicians, royals, and banksters who meet annually for secret talks.
Prince Philip, a couple of months before the WWF was founded in 1961, went on a hunt, a tiger hunt, in northern India, and slaughtered a bunch of tigers. Now, of course, the tiger is precisely what they're saying is going extinct. The Indian tiger is going extinct now. Now, there's a total uproar around the world about Prince Philip killing all these tigers. So as he continued on his travels, he put a bandage on his trigger finger. And he participated in another hunt, but with this big bandage there, so I can't possibly shoot anything. Now, he and Queen Elizabeth, with her home camera whirring away, mounted as part of a broader party 300 elephants, and they went out to kill more tigers and other species. Now, Prince Philip, as the elephants started closing in on various kinds of game, a very extremely rare Indian rhinoceros, of which there were only 250 in the whole world at that time, came within the circle of elephants. All of the royal party were horrified because they knew that Prince Philip would shoot it. So various people tried to shoot near the rhino to scare him away, etc. As the rhino kept blundering on, Prince Philip took aim and bam. The WWF, at its founding in 1961, took under its wing, in particular, the African elephant, the African rhino, the Indian rhino, the panda, and a few others. Now, the African elephant had a population of about 3 million when the World Wildlife Fund was founded. Today, it's several hundred thousand. The African rhino had a population of 100,000. Today, it is virtually extinct in the wild. The last living rhino herd in the wild, 700 rhinos, was destroyed by the WWF. It was slaughtered when they paid for it, and the ones that weren't slaughtered were drugged and were sent off to game farms in Australia, the United States, and elsewhere among Prince Philip's cronies in the 1001 Club. That's why there's no rhinos left in the wild to speak of, because Prince Philip and his gang killed them all.
When it comes to blood sports, it's an all-in-the-family affair, like father, like son, like grandson. On a trip to Kenya, Africa, Prince William took lessons in spearing African wildlife from a Maasai tribal member. According to a Fox News report, Prince William drove a 7-foot-long spear into a small antelope and killed it. Prince William recently purchased 250 birds, pheasants, ducks, and partridges, not as pets, but as shooting targets. As the birds were set free, William shot them out of the sky like skeet at the Queen's Sandringham estate. Prince William and Daddy Charles set packs of bloodhounds after foxes in Highgrove. It's jolly good fun chasing after terrorized foxes on horseback and watching the bloodhounds tear them to shreds. The World Wildlife Fund was not created to save endangered wildlife species. On the contrary, it has made a fortune from the illegal ivory trade, which it was supposed to prevent. Philip and Bernhard's World Wildlife Fund raised massive funds from corporations and public donations. They used the funds to confiscate huge tracts of land all over the world. The fund is being used as a land and power grab. The royal family's green policies have pushed native people off their ancient lands, shut down their farming, and caused food shortages and starvation. Saving animals and the environment is the phony excuse they use to pass international laws that advance their world government agenda. Prince Philip's son Charles is now the new president of the World Wildlife Fund, which has been renamed Worldwide Fund for Nature. It is one of the largest contributors to human and animal depopulation. The so-called conservation parks in Africa and elsewhere are covertly used to train terrorist groups and mercenaries. These paid mercenaries cross borders, start civil wars, and commit genocide in places like Rwanda and Kenya. Sadly, the trusting public have donated millions under the false illusion that they are supporting wildlife. 10 to 12 corporations run the world's food supply, which are grouped around Britain's Royal House of Windsor. The Windsor-led cartel includes Cargill, Continental, Monsanto, and Archer Daniels Midland, which dominate world grain, meat, dairy, edible oils and fats, fruits, vegetables, sugar, and spices. This cartel is hoarding food, minerals, and raw materials, and it has the power to shut down food production and export supplies worldwide.
A point on the environmental movement in general, a question for any of the environmentalists, so-called, in the panel there, Prince Philip was one of the key founders of the Green Movement. He said that if he were to be reincarnated, he'd want to be reincarnated into a deadly virus to solve the overpopulation problem. Well, the point is that the Green Movement was founded by those in the eugenics movement. This is Hitler Nazi race science, and this will destroy Africa. Can anyone make a comment?
Prince Philip Mountbatten, alias Battenberg, and the power elite view themselves as inheritors of the earth. Culling the population through eugenics is their answer to freeing up planet Earth's resources that are being consumed by what they consider racially inferior commoners and useless eaters.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
The Queen is the wealthiest person on Earth. Her gold carriage alone is made of 4 tons of solid gold, worth over $370 billion at today's gold prices. Until 1992, the Queen's income was all tax-free. In 1977, the Bank of England Nominees Limited was established to hide the Queen's investments. Secrecy about her wealth protects her from a public lynching. Government and banking officials inform the Queen about where to invest her wealth. That's called insider trading, and it's illegal. But the Queen gets away with it scot-free. Why? Because she's the Queen, and she's immune to prosecution. The Queen owns more than 300 residences, including castles and palaces, crown jewels, over 27,000 masterpieces, prize racehorses, and a fleet of Bentleys and Rolls-Royces. Her colossal wealth also includes crown land and investments that she inherited from her black nobility ancestors. The Queen's crown estate includes over 50% of the UK's coastline, as well as Regent Street and Windsor Great Park. Her trillions in wealth are passed down to her descendants, untaxed. Would British tourism collapse if the monarchy was abolished? No, statistically, Buckingham Palace doesn't even make the top 20 list of tourist attractions. When the Queen's parasitical income from British taxpayers was reduced, she pretended to share the suffering of commoners from austerity programs. That drop in taxpayer income was a teeny tiny drop in the royal bucket.
Those of you who heard of the Bilderbergers might have heard the fact when Prince Philip actually said that he wants to get rid of 85% of the population. He said that if it doesn't happen in his lifetime, he wants to come back as a virus and do the job himself.
No.
He wants to get rid of these he called useless food eaters. Well, I'm telling you firsthand, they're the bloody useless food eaters. They couldn't put a nail in a piece of wood or fry an egg to save their life.
Yeah!
Do you know how much the Queen is worth? £17 trillion. That's $30 trillion. She could end world hunger and poverty tomorrow. Instead, she just sits in her ivory tower and laughs at us. This is coming to an end.
$30 trillion? Of the billions of families on planet Earth, how did this one family manage to collect and hoard most of the world's wealth over the centuries? Besides insider trading and tax-free income, the answer is the slave trade and drug trade. Author Nick Hazelwood traces the slave trade to Queen Elizabeth I, who sent Captain John Hawkins to collect human slaves using any means necessary. Queen Elizabeth I started the British slave trade in 1564. As head of the Church of England, her slave trading of African blacks upset the moral foundations of the church.
He gets it!
Queen Elizabeth II is now head of the Church of England. 200 years after the slave trade was abolished, the Church was pressured into confessing its horrific crimes and apologizing for profiting from the African slave trade. At first, the Queen and the Church only admitted to owning slaves and plantations, but the public soon discovered that the Church had given their blessing to something far worse. The Church had approved the beating, mutilation, rape, kidnapping, and murder of tens of millions of Africans by declaring that Africans had no soul. This gave the Church a divine license to profit from their diabolical crimes. Queen Elizabeth I was Britain's first slave trader and the head of the Church of England. Today, the public is demanding that Queen Elizabeth II remove Queen Elizabeth I from the crypt in Westminster Abbey. Even more lucrative than Queen Elizabeth's slave trade was Queen Victoria's drug trade. Opium was grown and manufactured in the British-owned opium factories of British India. China banned the importation of opium, but once the British monarch secured a drug trade monopoly, over 17,000 illegal chests of opium worth millions were forced onto the Chinese population. The British waged 3 drug wars on China to force them to pay for the illegally imported opium. China's emperor didn't stand a chance against the British East India Company gunboats and Royal Navy. The British destroyed, plundered, looted, and raped their way along the coast of China until there was nothing left to loot or plunder. On August 29, 1842, the Treaty of Nanking forced the Chinese government to pay £15 million to the British merchants, to open up its ports to opium trade, and to cede Hong Kong to the British. This was the ugly origin of Hong Kong's 155 years as a stolen British Crown colony.
There are people who believe that they have a God-given right to rule over others. They believe that their outward appearance is superior to all others. They harbor selfish ambitions to be rich and to have power over what they describe as common people. They lie, cheat, steal, strangle, stab, and slash their way to power. They believe that their actual willpower, what the British occultist Aleister Crowley described as the will of Thelema, the royal will, must be obeyed. Literally millions of people have been slaughtered at the behest of the royal lust for war. And thousands of people have been assassinated so that demonic dukes and killer queens can reign supreme. This cabal of crowned killers use the global network of secret societies, loosely described as the Illuminati, to do their bidding and killing. The conspiratorial view of history is the correct view of history. Conspiracy to grab property, conspiracy to make illegal profits, and conspiracy to assassinate has been the driving force behind the royal political elite for thousands of years. For the crowned killers of Europe, torture, disemboweling, hanging, burning, strangling, poisoning, and killing in the most satanic manner is the order of the day. This is the modus operandi of royal families. For centuries,
the royal elite have devised terrible punishments for anyone accused of treason. The monarchy reserved the most disgusting forms of torture and death for those who questioned the royal will. A so-called traitor would often have each arm and leg tied to four horses, which were whipped to gallop in opposite directions, thus ripping the victim into four parts whilst still alive. Often, the royal elite would divide the victim's heart into sections and send these for public display to different parts of the country as a macabre warning. The British throne has been bathed in blood for centuries. At one time, Britain contained several small kingdoms. These small kingdoms, ruled over by an intermarried, self-elected elite, were gradually amalgamated into the single monarchy which rules over Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and secretly controls the United States of America.
The United States was founded on July 4th, 1776, in resistance to the hegemonic, despotic, tyrannical rule of King George III and the abuse against the colonies. And most of the British Parliament was against going to war with their fellow Englishmen, because the king was unpopular there as well. It was known that he was a German king, his father being brought over to rule England. These people could barely speak English. Nothing against Germans, but you don't see me going over to Germany to rule them. The very essence of July 4th and 1776 is resistance to the disgusting House of Windsor. They didn't get that name until around World War I, because before that they were known as the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas. Notice that we hear their names. Prince William. You never hear his last name, do you? The slave public, many of them in England, who support these people, don't even know their last names because they don't want you knowing their last names. Three times in the last 3 years, the Parliament in Canada hasn't done what the Queen of England wants, so she suspended them, shut down the Parliament. Happened in the late 70s in Australia. This is a tyrannical group pushing eugenics, population reduction, all the carbon taxes. Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, another German royal prince, is a supporter of eugenics. His cousin, who was the prince married to the Queen of the Netherlands, unadmitted Nazi, unadmitted eugenicist. The point is, these are the most filthy, degenerate people you can imagine. She owns more than half of Canada, more than half the land in England. So anytime you see some mind-numb zombie talking about how exciting the wedding is or how they watched it, you're watching a bunch of twitly, inbred idiots that can't even dress themselves and have valets. And until just a few decades ago, they try to keep it quiet. They have people that wipe their butts for them, groom of the stool. Do you know the history of America? Do you know it started in resistance to this very usurping German family who aren't even British? Do you know that most of the English hate the royal family? Do you know they have a secret police system that basically threatens people that talk about getting rid of the monarchy? Do you know that Princess Diana on record told her butler and others that made a videotape saying Prince Charles has threatened me, he's going to kill me in a fake auto accident? These people are absolutely anathema. And the servile folks that have been raised to worship these people and all the little old ladies that think it's cute, well, that's why we're enslaved. That's why our country's bankrupt. That's why we're going to hell in a handbasket, because you've forgotten what it is to be an American. Or perhaps you were never even taught. But now you're going to learn what it's like to be a subject, a slave.
Our republic was built on two core beliefs: a strong moral revulsion for the idea of royalty, and, okay, a look-the-other-way acceptance of slavery. But the king-queen thing, we definitely knew that was wrong and did not want our leaders coming from a long line of cousin fuckers. Americans get so excited when they meet royalty, but the royal protocol
should be offensive to any free humanist. When you meet the princess, bow slightly at the waist. Don't look in her eye. Do not offer your hand unless she offers her first. Gosh, I hope all that blends well with my protocol where the people I meet have to blow me.
The media has misled the public into believing that the British monarch is a symbolic, ceremonial figurehead with little or no real power, that she is a harmless old relic who passes her time sipping tea at the palace. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Queen embodies the crown and supreme world power. Presidents of the United States are forbidden any title of nobility and are subservient to the monarch. Prime ministers in Commonwealth nations like Canada and Australia are her prime ministers, and she is their head of state. Just like the Masonic symbols that are hidden in the American dollar bill, the 1% that rule the 1% that rule the 99% are also hiding in plain sight. They are hiding by reigning instead of ruling. The British monarch reigns, but she has chosen not to rule. Instead, she delegates her powers to presidents and prime ministers. This protects her from becoming a target of political hostilities. Meanwhile, the general public is kept in the dark about her true powers. So what exactly are the supreme powers that the monarch possesses? She has the power to grant titles like Sir. The Queen has the power to call elections and dissolve Parliament. She can dismiss prime ministers and the government. She can declare a state of emergency and command the armed forces. She can even declare war through her prime minister without even the consent of Parliament. There's a reason why the Queen's image appears on more coins, stamps, and paper currency than any other head of state in world history.
And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading.
In my own opinion, there can be no doubt that she was actually murdered.
As she used to say to me, I'm trouble to them. I won't go away. I won't go quietly.
Thank you. I think it was murder.
Historically, the relationship between the royal family and the courts has been difficult, mainly because every judge has taken an oath of allegiance to the Queen.
The British establishment think that they have got away with murder, but then what's new? They've been getting away with murder for centuries.
I don't think many people would want me to be Queen. Actually, when I say many people, I mean the establishment that I'm married into.
If Princess Diana had survived the car crash, she might have been present at her son's wedding, but she wouldn't be 37 anymore. The public was outraged when Newsweek magazine published a computer-generated photo of Diana as she would have looked today in her 50s. Who is Princess Diana, and how did she get mixed up with the world's most heartless, power-crazed inbreds? Officially, Diana's father was the 8th Earl John Spencer. He was a descendant of the 5th Earl John Spencer, who was a groom of the stool. What, pray tell, is a groom of the stool? A groom of the stool is responsible for stools, the kind you sit on and the kind you expel. In other words, a groom of the stool wipes royal bottoms. The 5th Earl John Spencer wiped the ass of His Highness the Prince of Wales from 1862 to 1866.
And we've done deep research on this. They still have their butts wiped for them. Now, if you don't believe me, you Google groom of the stool. You cannot make this up. You will be reading mainstream university websites, mainstream news articles. It's called the groom of the stool. And a British lord follows the queen or king, depending on what it is around, follows them around, and they set up in this big cabinet, and they have to fly it around with her. This has been on the news. That's why they fly it around. They claim they stopped it in 1906, but deeper research shows they're just very quiet about it, and millions of pounds are spent a year to move this portable toilet around because it's got to be big enough. She goes up on a throne and craps. I'm sorry. This is real, folks. I'm not groom of the stool. Google it. And they wipe her fat butt.
Would Charles, who is today's Prince of Wales, marry and mix his family's precious royal blood with Diana if she was from a bloodline of lowly asswipers? Of course not. According to the New York Times best-selling author Tina Brown, Sir James Goldsmith is Diana's real father. He had a long-term affair with Diana's mother during her marriage to Earl John Spencer. Multiple news sources maintain that James Goldsmith and Diana's mother Frances were lovers when Diana was conceived. Diana's mother was deeply unhappy in her marriage to Earl John Spencer, who drank heavily and acted beastly towards her. She finally divorced him and remarried in 1969. What kind of a man was James Goldsmith, the alleged real father of Princess Diana? Goldsmith was a Jewish bankster and one of the 20 wealthiest men in the world. Despite his criminal money laundering and bankruptcy schemes, he was never charged with anything. Why? Because Goldsmith was a ruthlessly vulgar man who was above the law.
Well, people are upset by vulgarity. And vulgarity is to some degree a sign of vigor. It means that new people coming from nowhere are making it. It's the old American dream. Anybody can become a millionaire. So if we want change, if we want vigor, we're going to have vulgarity. It's one of the things which irritates, but which is necessary.
James Goldsmith's ancestors were neighbors of the Rothschild banksters in Frankfurt, Germany. The Goldsmith and Rothschild families intermarried. Princess Diana shared a striking family resemblance to James Goldsmith's three children, Zach, Ben, and Jemima. They are allegedly Diana's half-brothers and sister. Diana most closely resembles Zach Goldsmith. How close are the Goldsmiths to the Rothschilds nowadays?
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
In 2003, Diana's alleged half-brother, Ben Goldsmith, married Kate Rothschild.
That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Diana's other alleged half-brother, Zach Goldsmith, is a wealthy British MP who inherited $600 million from Daddy Goldsmith. He has been living with his mistress, Alice Rothschild. This Rothschild-Goldsmith couple is also expected to marry. Jemima Goldsmith was Princess Diana's very best friend and confidant. A women's weekly magazine called New Idea Australia created a furor in Britain when it published a story about Jemima and Diana being sisters. The magazine was quoted as saying that the sister secret has been known within British aristocratic circles for 40 years. News reports that both Diana and Jemima were fathered by billionaire tycoon Sir James Goldsmith were widely circulated all over Australia and Britain. It is a well-known fact that during Diana's unhappy marriage to Charles, she sought comfort not from the Spencers, but from her surrogate family, the Goldsmiths.
Ever fading with the sunset when the rain set in, and your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
Goldsmith, Goldsmith. Where have we heard the name Goldsmith before? Oh yes, Carol Goldsmith, the mother of Kate. The name Goldsmith is quintessentially a Jewish name, which suggests that Kate has Jewish ancestors. Since Jewish identity is passed down through the mother's line, there is speculation that Kate is somewhat Jewish. Kate's uncle Gary is also a Goldsmith. He is her mother's extremely wealthy drug-dealing, porn-peddling brother, whose house of Bang Bang is a popular vacation destination for Kate and William. The media painted Kate as an ordinary commoner like Cinderella. But how many ordinary commoners have a mother with enough influence and money to send their daughter to the same posh university as Prince William? Yes, Kate's mother is a Goldsmith, all right, and there's plenty of evidence that William's mother, Diana, was also a Goldsmith. Do William and Kate have a common ancestor? A Goldsmith from Frankfurt, Germany, perhaps? That would make Kate and William kissing cousins like Philip and Liz. Now that Kate is married to William, what is her married surname? Since William is the son of Prince Charles, who is the son of Prince Philip Mountbatten, whose real German surname is Battenberg, then technically William is a Battenberg, and so is Kate. Diana's family story wouldn't be complete without viewing her mother's side of the family tree. Diana's mother's name is Frances Roche. Her grandmother, Ruth Roche, served the Queen as a woman of the bedchamber. Where did the name Roche come from? There is speculation that Princess Diana is a descendant of Jacob Frank, the infamous 18th-century rabbi who claimed to be the reincarnation of the false Jewish messiah, Sabbatai Zevi. Jacob Frank had a son named Roscius Frank, who reversed his name and became known in Europe as Frank Roche. Diana's mother's name, Frances Roche, is the female equivalent of the name Frank Roche.
I'm gonna be a mighty king, so enemies beware.
Well, I've never seen a king of beasts with quite so little hair.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king.
For Charles, the royal marriage to Princess Diana on July 29, 1981, had nothing whatsoever to do with love. It was an arranged marriage for the concealed purpose of joining the Windsor bloodline with the Goldsmith-Rothschild bloodline. When an interviewer asked the royal couple if they were in love, Diana shyly answered, "Of course." And Charles rudely answered, "Whatever in love means."
And I suppose in love.
Of course.
Whatever in love means.
In November of 1981, the palace announced that the princess was pregnant. Diana's struggle with her health proved doubly difficult.
Sick the whole time, bulimia and morning sickness. People tried to put me on pills to stop me being sick. I refused to take the responsibility that if the child appeared handicapped, I wasn't going to take responsibility.
Her eating disorder was a well-known fact in the royal household.
The bulimia was evident, I think, to anybody who'd known her before and then subsequently saw her, and she became thinner and thinner.
New Year's 1982. Just 5 months into their marriage, pregnant Diana was feeling wretched. Their relationship continued to unravel. She felt Charles was incapable of understanding her turmoil. She threatened to take her own life.
Charles said, "I was crying wolf." And I said, "I just felt so desperate and I was crying my eyes out." And he said, "I'm not going to listen. You're always doing this to me." He said, "I'm going riding now." So I threw myself down the stairs. Bearing in mind I was carrying a child. Queen comes out, absolutely horrified, shaking. She's so frightened. I knew I wasn't going to lose the baby, quite bruised around the stomach. And Charles went out riding. And when he came back, you know, it was just dismissal. Total dismissal.
It was one of several half-hearted suicide attempts she would make over the next decade. She revealed on the tapes that she had tried to cut her wrists and had thrown herself into a glass cabinet at Kensington Palace.
I was very ill. We were trying to hide that from everybody. I had to come down for treatment because I was so depressed and I was trying to cut my wrist with razor blades.
And she recalled another incident.
After 5 years of being married, my sister Jane came up to see me and I had a V-neck on and shorts. She said, "Dutch, what's that marking on your chest?" And I said, "Oh, it's nothing." She said, "What is it?" And the night before, I wanted to talk to Charles about something. He wouldn't listen to me. He said, "I was crying wolf." So I picked up his penknife off his dressing table and scratched myself heavily down my chest and my both thighs. There was a lot of blood and it hadn't made any reaction whatsoever.
Suicide attempts are desperate calls for help. It didn't much matter, Diana said. No one was listening. The media interest in the impending birth was intense. So much so that Diana couldn't handle the pressure and wanted labor to be induced. But she recalled, it was difficult to schedule a birth date around the father-to-be's polo matches.
When we had William, we had to find a date in the diary that suited him, his polo. And William had to be induced because I couldn't handle the pressure any longer. It was becoming unbearable. It was as if everybody was monitoring every day for me. Anyway, the boy arrived, great excitement, thrills, everyone was absolutely on high as a kite. We found a day that Charles could get off his polo pony for me to give birth. That was very nice, felt very grateful about that.
As Britain celebrated its new heir,
he's in marvelous form.
Diana retreated into depression.
Came home, and then postnatal depression hit me hard. And it wasn't so much the baby that had produced it, it was the baby that triggered off all else that was going on in my mind. Boy, was I troubled.
The birth of Prince William Arthur Philip Lewis Windsor on June 21, 1982, was not a natural birth. It was an induced birth on the summer solstice, when Druids, witches, and Satanists gather and celebrate at pagan sites throughout Scotland, England, and Wales. The intense celebrations carried on far into the night, with sexual orgies, sacrifices, black masses, and satanic worship on the longest day of the year. The ancient Druids had already prophesied that sometime in the future, on June 21st, their Sun King would be born of a princess. William's induced birth was not only accompanied by a solar eclipse, but by an even rarer lunar eclipse and by strange alignments of the stars and planets. Diana was the name of the ancient moon goddess who gave birth to the sun. Coinciding with William's birth was the release of the 1982 Hollywood film Omen 3, The Final Conflict, with its countless connections to England and the Antichrist.
Your pain on the cross was but a splinter compared to the agony of my father, cast out from heaven, the fallen angel, banished, reviled. I will drive deeper the thorns into your rancid carcass, you profaner of vices, cursed Nazarene.
That same year, the controversial New York Times bestseller, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, hit the bookstands and shocked the world. The book was published by Dell Publishing, located at 666 Fifth Avenue, New York. The authors released documented evidence that Jesus did not die on the cross and that he lived to marry and father a child. The authors also claimed that Israel's royal bloodline of King David was passed down through Jesus' daughter, who married into French Merovingian royalty. Kitty Kelly's book, The Royals, reveals that the late Princess Diana was a descendant of the Merovingian kings. The book suggests that Diana is a carrier of the holy bloodline of Christ. To the occult mind, Diana represents the Holy Grail. She is the receptor of Christ's blood, which is said to have survived the ages. The Knights Templar and secret brotherhoods are reportedly the unseen hands that have protected the holy bloodline through the rise and fall of empires until it reaches its final recipient, who will rule in the name of Christ. Sir Lawrence Gardner is the best-selling author of Bloodline of the Holy Grail. Gardner claims the resurrection of Jesus was a hoax perpetrated by the church. The church falsified the gospel record so they could justify their existence as holy mediators between the people and the resurrected Christ. Dan Brown's explosive bestseller, The Da Vinci Code, sold over 80 million copies and was translated into 44 languages. The book reaffirmed that Jesus fathered a child with Mary Magdalene, and that his bloodline was passed down to European royalty. But the book didn't say which European royalty. They let the audience take a wild guess. What messages did the Da Vinci Code and movie sell to audiences around the world? Message number one, the Holy Grail is not a physical cup. The Holy Grail is a woman, namely Mary Magdalene. The Holy Grail cup symbolizes her womb and the surviving bloodline of Christ. Message number two. Mary Magdalene was not a prostitute. That story was invented by the church to hide the intimate relationship between Christ and Mary Magdalene. Message number three. The Grail relics hidden by the Knights Templar included documents and the actual bones of Mary Magdalene as proof. Message number four. At the time of the crucifixion, Mary Magdalene was pregnant. After the crucifixion, she fled to Gaul, which is now France, where she gave birth to a daughter named Sarah. Message number five. Sarah eventually married into Merovingian royalty. The Merovingians are carriers of the holy bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Message number six. To this day, the Knights Templars are devoted to returning a descendant of Christ's lineage to the throne of Jerusalem. They have passed on the secret through an underground network of secret societies that include the Priory of Zion. Leonardo da Vinci was a member of the Priory of Zion. Message number seven. Da Vinci knew the Grail secret and he coded it into his masterpiece painting, The Last Supper. The figure seated next to Jesus is not a man, but a woman. She is Jesus' wife, Mary Magdalene. Another world-famous artist also hid the Grail secret in his work. Frederick Bartholdi was a 33rd-degree Freemason. He was commissioned by the Freemasons of France to create a monolithic statue as a gift to the Freemasons of America. Like Da Vinci, Bartholdi's masterpiece hid the secret in plain sight. He created a statue of Mary Magdalene in an advanced state of pregnancy. The statue has nothing whatsoever to do with liberty. Why are the Illuminati-owned publishers and movie studios releasing propaganda books and movies about the holy bloodline of Christ? The motive can be found in these Associated Press photos of Prince William holding a lamb like Jesus. The media has sold the idea that Princess Diana was a carrier of the holy bloodline of Christ, which implies that William, her firstborn son and heir to the throne, has divine blood. The media monopolies have created the public expectation that a final battle between good and evil is near, and what the world needs now is a savior. Diana's tragic death won worldwide love and sympathy for her lookalike son William, whose popularity has soared since her passing. He is now the most beloved figure in the UK. William is immune to bad publicity. The Rothschild-controlled Associated Press have protected him from all criticism, scandal, and tabloid attacks on his character. He's being packaged as the responsible, handsome, and saintly heir to the throne. To prepare for his role as king, William has trained in all branches of the British military. His role as an RAF search and rescue pilot sets the stage for newsworthy acts of heroism and saintliness.
Well, that's definitely out.
Free to do it all my way.
If this is where the monarchy is headed, count me out. Out of service, out of Africa, I wouldn't hang about. This child is getting wildly out of wing.
Oh,
I'm rather an inspiring thing.
Oh, I just can't wait to be.
What would life be like living under one world government ruled by a world king? Who are the candidates that the entire world would be willing to unite under and accept as their world king and savior? Bible prophecy reveals that the coming world king is the Prince of Darkness or Antichrist. He will ascend to power on a platform of peace and will claim to be humanity's savior, but he will be a counterfeit savior. He will bring about peace by disarming the world of its weapons of war. In so doing, he will hold the power over one world government and one world army. Biblical prophecy scholar and author Dr. Joy Pugh believes she has uncovered the true identity of the Antichrist through her exhaustive research. Dr. Joy is the author of Eden, The Knowledge of Good and Evil, and Antichrist, The Cloned Image of Jesus Christ. What really happened in the Garden of Eden is very different from the apple and snake story that many have been told in Sunday school, says Dr. Joy. She believes that Eve bore a son, Cain, with the serpent, which produced a lineage of satanic hybrids. Dr. Joy is convinced that the Shroud of Turin is a legitimate artifact. She believes it is the linen cloth that Jesus was wrapped in following his crucifixion. Is the shroud an authentic imprinted image of Jesus Christ? Scientists and researchers are still debating the issue, and the Catholic Church hasn't made up its mind. The shroud is real, insists Dr. Joy, who believes that carbon dating of this artifact may have been a conspiracy to cover up its legitimacy. Dr. Joy points to evidence in the book of Revelation that the Antichrist is a demonic clone of Jesus Christ. Since clones don't have a soul, a clone of Jesus would be the reincarnated Jesus without a soul. A Jesus clone would therefore be open to possession by a satanic entity. Dr. Joy believes that Prince William was cloned using Christ's DNA taken from bloodstains on the Shroud of Turin, and that William shares the same DNA as Christ. Her research has unearthed a myriad of clues suggesting that Princess Diana was used by the royal family as a sacrificial broodmare to usher in the cloned Antichrist, Prince William.
What most people don't know is that she tried to kill herself while she was carrying William, and she tried several times to do it, to the point that she threw herself downstairs to try and kill him, as if something she knew was wrong about all this. But at the same time, they put her on all kinds of medications, and they doped her up, and they did all this kind of weird stuff. But I find it interesting that when she delivered him, that she began to seem like that you could tell that there was already a problem between her and Charles. So it's almost like Charles had done his duty, and he was through with her. And we know that some of the things that she did on TV with, like, Jane Pauley, she actually told in tapes that she felt like that she had been used as a birthing chamber. And if you understand cloning, you understand from, like, Dolly that was actually a cloned sheep, that she came from the udder cell of her mother who had already passed. But she was carried by another sheep that had nothing totally genetic involved with her. And when she was delivered, she was the exact duplicate. I don't mean a twin. I mean a duplicate copy. So therefore, if for some reason Diana was trying to kill her and that baby, there was something going on that was bad. And so if she felt like she was a birthing chamber, then that makes you wonder, was she carrying an egg that had a cloned cell in it, which would not make them genetically connected to her or to Charles? And this is very interesting in the fact that they named him William Arthur. And if you look at his name, Will, Diana would not call him William. She called him Wills. She left off the I-A-M, which, if you say that, is I am. And what did God call himself? I am. What is William's second name? Arthur. I am Arthur.
Eventually, says Joy, proof will be released that the Shroud of Turin is authentic. She predicts that when Prince William's DNA is proven to match Christ's DNA, the public will mistakenly embrace and worship this counterfeit Messiah. If Prince William is a clone of Jesus, as Dr. Joy suggests, he would be an identical physical copy of Jesus. Jesus is illustrated in religious art as a dark-haired, dark-eyed Hebrew. William, on the other hand, has fair hair, blue eyes, and German Aryan features. Prince William is, in all likelihood, the biological son of Princess Diana and Prince Charles, whose arranged marriage joined the German Saxe-Coburg-Gotha bloodline with the German Goldsmith-Rothschild bloodline. The propaganda that William is a descendant of Jesus Christ through his mother's Merovingian bloodline is just that. Propaganda. It's a hoax that's been foisted on the public by the media through movies and books like The Da Vinci Code and Holy Blood, Holy Grail. The public has been primed for the arrival of a Messiah Savior based on the manufactured belief that the holy lineage of Jesus has survived the ages through the Merovingian kings. To sell the hoax that William is a descendant of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, the media would need to deliver reliable and convincing proof. The public would need to witness William's Christ-like ability to perform miracles, like healing the sick or raising the dead. His job as an RAF search and rescue pilot is a perfect vehicle for staging a miracle rescue. The public would also need DNA evidence that William's DNA is linked to the DNA of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. The holy DNA could be retrieved from a number of sources. The Shroud of Turin is one DNA source. The presumed remains of Mary Magdalene are another DNA source. Mary Magdalene's arm is preserved at Vézelay, France, and her skull is encased in a marble sarcophagi at Saint-Maximin-la-Sainte-Baume, France. Another DNA source is a tooth of Mary Magdalene's, which is encased in a reliquary at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. Once a genetic match is made and authenticated for the public record, William would be embraced by the Christian world. Many will view him as the returned Savior and Messiah. As a descendant of Jesus Christ and a proponent of world religion, William would also be accepted by Buddhists, Hindus, and the Eastern world, where Jesus Christ reportedly lived, studied, and preached Eastern philosophy. William's alleged pedigree as a descendant of the Davidic tribe of Judah would win his acceptance among Jews worldwide. He would also be accepted by worldwide Freemasonry and secret societies, which he is a member of. When William's mother reportedly died in a Paris car crash in the arms of a Muslim man, the hearts of the entire world went out to him, including the Muslim world, where he is adored. William, the handsome, charismatic, and charitable heir to the British throne, is already loved, trusted, worshipped, and adored by the masses. Considering all of the possible candidates that the entire world might be willing to unite under as their world king, Prince William is the most eligible candidate. In his book, Antichrist in a Cup of Tea, author Tim Cohen details the British monarchy's centuries-long conspiracy to create a new world order through the world's most powerful organization, the Order of the Garter. The Order of the Garter is the 1% who rule the 1% who rule the 99% of the world population. Founded in 1348, the Order's membership is limited to Charles, the Prince of Wales, the Sovereign Queen, and no more than 24 Knighted Companion members at any one time. The Order of the Garter is the parent organization of worldwide Freemasonry. When a Mason receives his 33rd degree, he swears allegiance to the Order of the Garter. The Order of the Garter is the absolute core leadership of the Priory of Zion, the Knights Templar, Scottish Rite Freemasonry, the Rosicrucians, and the powerful Committee of 300. This medieval order is a precursor to the coming establishment of the New World Order Roundtable. On April 23, 2008, Prince William, whose second name is Arthur, became the 999th member of the Order of the Garter. 999 is the mirror image of 666. News sources reported William was the 1,000th member instead of the 999th member after the name of the founder was added on. The Knights of the Order of the Garter would serve as the Knights of King Arthur's Circle of the Round Table once Prince William Arthur is crowned Divine King and World Ruler. The motto of the Order of the Garter is an evil curse, Oni soit qui mal y pense, which means, evil unto him who thinks evil of it. The it refers to evil itself, so the true translation of the curse is, evil unto him who thinks evil of evil. The garter is an emblem of a witch's coven and of witchcraft, which was practiced by the founder of the order, King Edward III. Prince Charles' coat of arms incorporates the Order of the Garter motto and emblem as well as the red dragon. The red dragon is mentioned only once in the book of Revelation to denote Satan. The scriptures describe the spirit of the Antichrist as a red dragon rising up from its otherworldly abyss and, foreknowing its target, possesses the prince and gives him his power and his throne and great authority. A red dragon is found in the top right quadrant of the shield on William's coat of arms, but it's partially hidden by a white horn. In the book of Revelation, the beast is described as being like a leopard with the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. On the left side of William's coat of arms, the beast that is holding up the shield fits the biblical description perfectly. The beast has the body of a leopard, the feet of a bear, and the mouth of a lion. At the top of William's coat of arms is another lion. This dominating lion symbolizes the one-world ruler who is the king above all kings. Notice how this ruling lion is detached, like the capstone of the Egyptian pyramid on the U.S. dollar bill. It is waiting to be attached when the world king starts his rule. The unicorn on the right side of William's coat of arms symbolizes purity of heart and imagination. The unicorn is chained, which symbolizes the bondage of the heart and mind. Note how the chain leads from the unicorn's crown to the earth and binds it. The unicorn is the counterfeit Christ, says Tim Cohen in his book, The Antichrist in a Cup of Tea. The book of Revelation predicts that the beast will force everyone to receive a mark on their right hand or forehead. Today, the mark of the beast is an implantable satellite-linked microchip called the X-Mark, which stores your financial, medical, and personal history and can track you anywhere on the planet. It is capable of enslaving the world so that no one can buy or sell or even participate in society without being marked. Prince William had an electronic chip implanted in his right hand in 1995. Let's take another look at the AP photos released by Buckingham Palace of William holding a lamb like Jesus. Notice how William is symbolically holding up the cloven hoof of the lamb. Satan is commonly illustrated with cloven hooves. Prince William is being promoted as the Lamb of God, like Jesus, in the Associated Press photo. Art and literature describe the Antichrist as handsome and charming and a master of lies and deception. Why is Prince William holding up a cloven hoof in the photograph? Those with knowledge of the occult understand the message in this photo, which identifies William as the Antichrist. On June 9, 2011, Prince William and Kate attended an elite royal gala event at Kensington Palace. The overhead hologram appears to be a demon eating the head off of a lamb. On July 3, 2011, Prince William and his new bride visited Canada, where protesters booed and held up signs calling them royal parasites and demanding an end to the monarchy.
This is a small, noisy demonstration.
In Quebec City, a ceremonial parade was held for the royal couple, and a goat with gold horns and a blue jacket was marched in front of Prince William. The billy goat is descended from Queen Elizabeth's private stock of royal goats. Billy is a nickname for William. In this photograph, Prince William is wearing a Royal Air Force patch that displays a goat head symbol. The goat head is a symbol for the goat of Mendes, which represents Satan and the Antichrist. The Baphomet is another name for the goat of Mendes. It is the deity that is worshipped by the Knights Templar. Today, The Baphomet pentagram is the official symbol of the Church of Satan. In black magic, the Baphomet is the source and creator of all evil. It is portrayed as half-human, half-goat. This symbol can be traced from ancient Sumer in Egypt right through to its global use today in modern witchcraft. The ancient Sumerians made clay tablets describing the extraterrestrial god Enki, who genetically engineered the human race with his demon seed. The symbols for Enki and Satan are the same, the goat and the snake. The goat symbol played an important role on September 11, 2001. George W. Bush was reading a story about a pet goat to a group of schoolchildren when he was informed that a second plane had hit the World Trade Center and that America was under attack. Look closely. The book held by the president is upside down. Why? Because Satanism inverts images. Bush remained seated for 7 minutes and kept reading about the goat while Americans were burning alive and leaping to their death from the burning towers. In most tarot card decks, the devil card shows the Baphomet sitting on an altar above two naked human demons chained to his seat. He is holding a flaming torch in his left hand that is inverted towards the earth. On his forehead is an upside-down pentagram. When points on a pentagram point upwards, they symbolize the devil attacking the heavens with its horns. The horned hand signal is a satanic salute that communicates an allegiance to Satan. The extended index and small fingers symbolize the horns of Satan. The Antichrist or beast is clearly identified in biblical prophecy as the number 666. When Prince William is crowned king, his formal title will be King William V. Hidden within his name are the words, "I am." Also hidden within his name is the number 666 in Roman numerals. The Roman numeral I appears 3 times in his name. The Roman numeral V also appears 3 times in his name. The letter W is really 2 V's placed side by side. The number 666 in Roman numerals is VI, VI, VI. It is hidden in the name King William V, and so are the words "I am." The hidden message built into his name is, "I am 666. I am the Antichrist." What hymn did the ruling family sing on William's wedding day in Westminster Abbey? The flag-waving public were too hypnotized by the fairy tale media hype to even question why a hymn called "Jerusalem" was featured at William's wedding. Here are the main lyrics of the hymn. Why are the ruling family singing about the fight to build Jerusalem at William's wedding of the century? The answer lies in the UK's Union Jack flag. No one has bothered to question why the Union Jack flag is called the Union Jack. Who is Jack? The answer is Jack Ub. Jack Ub, or Jacob, is the patriarch of the Jews. According to biblical scripture, Jacob laid his head on a stone and dreamt about a ladder reaching to heaven. The stone is said to be the same stone that has been placed beneath the throne chair of every British monarch during their coronation ceremony. It's called the Stone of Jacob. The Stone of Jacob will also be placed beneath William's throne chair when he is crowned king. Most of us were taught revisionist history in school. To make sense out of what's going on in the world today, we need to learn a few simple facts about Israel's history without the revisions. According to the Bible story, Jacob fathered 12 Hebrew sons who invaded the land of Canaan. Canaan was the homeland of the Philistine people. After defeating the Philistines, the 12 Hebrew tribes carved up the land of Canaan into 12 tribal districts. They renamed the land of Canaan Israel, Israel, after their gods, Isis, Amun-Ra, and Elohim. By 69 AD, Roman soldiers burned the city of Jerusalem to the ground and destroyed the Hebrew Temple of Solomon. All that remained of the Jewish temple was a wall, which still stands today in the city of Jerusalem. After the 12 Hebrew tribes fled from the land of Canaan, which they had renamed Israel, the Romans gave the land back to the Philistines and called it Palestine. Palestine was the Romanized word for Philistine. Today, the descendants of the Philistines are the Palestinians of Palestine. Where did the 12 tribes of Israel go after they fled from the land they had renamed Israel? The serpent tribe of Dan became seafaring pirates. They emblazoned the symbols of the snake and dragon on their red and white flag, together with the crest of an eagle. According to Bible prophecy, the Antichrist will descend from the tribe of Dan. Carvings of snakes and dragons on their ships, the red and white stripes on their sails, and archaeological relics reveal that the tribe of Dan became the dreaded Vikings. These ferocious seafaring pirates raped, burned, and looted their way up the coast of Europe into the British Isles, incorporating the name of their tribal leader Dan into towns and rivers along their migration route, like the mighty river Danube and the Jordan River. Since vowels were interchangeable in the original Hebrew language, Dan could be pronounced Din, Don, or Den. It was embedded in the name London, Scandinavia, Sweden, and Denmark. Denmark literally means the Mark of Dan. By 1016 AD, the Viking king Canute seized the throne of England, Denmark, and Sweden. Today's British royalty are descended from the serpent tribe of Dan and from the Viking kings whose symbol is the dragon. Prince Charles' coat of arms displays a red dragon and the German words Ich dien, which means I serve. I serve the red dragon. I serve Satan. Prince William's coat of arms also features a red dragon, which is partially hidden by a three-point white label. Notice the checkered floor beneath William's wedding guests, which is a known symbol of Freemasonry. Rowan Williams, the Archbishop, who married William and Kate, is a confirmed Druid member. Druid ceremonies include pagan sun worship in stone circles. Notice the sun symbolism on the back of the Archbishop's robe. Prince William and the British royal family claimed descent from King David and the Jewish tribe of Judah, but the evidence shows they are descended from the tribe of Dan and the Viking kings, whose symbols are the snake and dragon. It took nearly 1,000 years for the tribes of Israel to reunite after fleeing from Jerusalem in 70 AD. They reunited in the British Isles under the flag of their Jewish patriarch, Jacob, or Jacob. It took another 1,000 years for the Jewish tribes to reclaim the land that the Romans had given back to the Philistines. How did they do it? In 1917, the British Earl of Balfour signed the Balfour Declaration, promising to give the nation of Palestine to Lord Rothschild and the Jewish Zionists. This criminal declaration was made even before the British had conquered the nation of Palestine at the end of World War I. During World War II, American corporations supplied gas, money, vehicles, and weaponry to Hitler and the Nazis. By the end of World War II, the British conquered and turned the Muslim nation of Palestine over to the Rothschild Zionists as promised. The Zionists populated the land with boatloads of Jewish refugees from Nazi concentration camps. By 1948, the name of the Muslim nation of Palestine was officially changed to the Jewish State of Israel. According to Jewish historian and best-selling author Simon Shammah, the Rothschild Zionists financed illegal settlements on Palestinian land. They now own 80% of the Palestinian land that they renamed Israel. What is a Zionist? Zionists are a minority of Christian and Jewish extremists who believe that the Jews have a God-given right to the land of Israel. Why? Because according to the Judeo-Christian Bible, God said so. But wouldn't that make God a racist God who favors Jews over all others? How big is the Promised Land? God's promised land to the Jews extends far beyond the borders of present-day Israel. It includes Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, half of Iraq, half of Egypt, parts of Turkey and Saudi Arabia, the modern state of Israel, as well as the West Bank and Gaza. The 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center in New York City served as the perfect excuse to justify bombing, occupying, disarming, and bankrupting Israel's Muslim neighbors. It also scared hundreds of billions of tax dollars out of traumatized American citizens. 9/11 was a Zionist false flag operation. Within 24 hours of the attack, America launched a Blame the Muslims campaign that ignited the Zionist War of Terror on the Muslim nations surrounding Israel. Ultimately, the grand scheme of the Zionist plot is to reclaim Jerusalem and rebuild Solomon's Temple, which was destroyed by the Romans almost 2,000 years ago. Today, Israel's Jews pray at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, which is all that remains of Solomon's Temple. The design and cornerstones for the new Solomon's Temple have already been completed.
Every day, three times a day, Jews recite this prayer. May it be your will that the temple be speedily rebuilt in our own time. It's a prayer they prayed for almost 2,000 years.
But Jews here in Jerusalem are doing more than just praying. Just a few steps away from the Western Wall, rabbis and craftsmen are building what they call a temple in waiting.
We're supposed to build a temple, and nothing about that changed. Nothing about that commandment changed.
Chaim Richman is a director at the Temple Institute in Jerusalem.
The Temple Institute is actively engaged in research and preparation for the resumption of the service in the Holy Temple to the extent of actually preparing operational blueprints for the construction of the temple according to the most modern standards.
This menorah is just one of several vessels created for the next temple. It's covered with 95 pounds of pure gold and has a price tag of $2 million.
Piece by piece, the third temple is taking shape, with priest garments, vessels of copper, gold, and silver, and a new generation of Levite priests, specially trained for temple service.
We have enough in place now to resume the divine service and to build the temple. But obviously, a lot of things have to happen in order for this to happen.
Gershon Solomon leads a group called the Temple Mount Faithful. They commissioned these cornerstones for the third temple. The 6-ton stones were consecrated with water from the biblical pool of Siloam and cut with diamonds.
The Temple Mount, 35 acres of it, is the most explosive piece of territory on the face of the planet.
Jewish leaders have already established a training center in Jerusalem where temple priests are now learning how to offer the required animal blood sacrifices and to conduct the daily temple services.
Now, of course, there's limits on exactly what sacrifices we can do because of the state of impurity that we're in. Some sacrifices we can't do without the ashes of the red heifer, but the Passover offering, national sacrifices we can perform in a state of impurity.
So what's stopping the Zionist Jews from rebuilding Solomon's temple? What's stopping them is a Muslim shrine called Dome of the Rock, which was built in 691 A.D., right over the top of the ruins of Solomon's temple. It is one of the world's holiest Muslim sites. This sacred real estate is, without a doubt, the most dangerous real estate on planet Earth. The Muslim Dome of the Rock is the elephant in the room. The Zionist plan to rebuild Solomon's temple on sacred ground must, by necessity, be a plan that reduces the Muslim Dome of the Rock to rubble. Building Solomon's temple means the Muslim shrine must fall, either by a natural disaster like an earthquake, or a man-made disaster like an exploding bomb. A man-made disaster would surely be the spark that ignites World War III.
When a British monarch is crowned, an elaborate ceremony takes place, which resembles the ritual crowning of King Solomon of ancient Israel. King Solomon ruled over ancient Israel and had extensive knowledge of the Kabbalah, which he used to communicate with demons. King Solomon is the single most important figure in the occult teachings of world international Freemasonry. The ancient Goetia is a book of powerful invocations and spells written by King Solomon. These ancient spells and evocations were used to summon spirits who were then psychically tortured and forced to serve King Solomon. The Goetia contains descriptions of 72 demons, some of whom control their own army of lesser demons. King Solomon evoked and imprisoned these spirits in a bronze vessel sealed using magic symbols. The Goetia explains how the spirits can be compelled into obedience. The Goetia describes a demonic royal hierarchy of spirits, many of which are referred to as knights, princes, and kings. King Solomon ruled ancient Israel from the year 970 to 928 BC. Satanists, occultists, and Freemasons worldwide venerate the memory of King Solomon, who owned a magic ring engraved with a symbol called the Seal of Solomon. This gave him power over the invisible monarchy of demons. This seal of Solomon is better known as the Star of David. It is this symbol which is encoded into the $1 bill. It is also the flag of Israel. Magicians and mediums who consult with spirits have always been employed by the royal elite. In medieval Britain, Dr. John Dee was consulted regularly by Queen Elizabeth I. At the British Museum in London, we see the dark mirror which John Dee used to see or scry the faces of spirits. Dee's ability to communicate with spirits led him to be employed as a spy, developing psychic espionage techniques, which we now call remote viewing. John Dee attended Trinity College in Cambridge, which became a place where occultists and the world of spies were intertwined. Aleister Crowley also attended Trinity College. In 1904, he wrote an introduction to an ancient book of spells called the Goetia. Soon after, Aleister Crowley followed the footsteps of John Dee and worked as a spy for Her Majesty's Secret Intelligence Service, MI5. Dr. John Dee was secretly initiated into the secrets of the Kabbalah by Rabbi Lowe in the 1500s. The Kabbalah offers a route map which is called the Tree of Life. Discarnate spirits, some angelic, some evil, occupy each point on the Tree of Life. These spirits can be called forth and invoked to serve the magician. Medieval astrologers and Kabbalists such as John Dee were hired by monarchs to plan their wars or to experiment with alchemy, trying to transform base metals into gold and thus increase the already spectacular wealth of the monarchy.
Once World War III has come and gone and the Muslim shrine has been destroyed, the new Jewish temple of King Solomon will be built over its ruins in Jerusalem, and a king will sit on the throne chair. There are three important texts that predict an apocalyptic Third World War, which would give rise to one world empire and one world king. The Bible's Book of Revelation, the Illuminati's Protocols of Zion, and Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma. A statue of Albert Pike stands today on a pedestal in Washington, D.C. What did Albert Pike do to deserve a statue in his honor on federal land at the foot of Capitol Hill? Albert Pike was the sovereign pontiff of Universal Freemasonry and a known Satanist who possessed a bracelet which he used to summon Lucifer. After the American Civil War, he was imprisoned for treason, but thanks to Freemason President Andrew Johnson, Pike was pardoned. By 1869, Pike had become the National Chief Judiciary Officer and Grand Dragon of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan in Arkansas. By 1871, he published the Masonic Handbook known as Morals and Dogma. Albert Pike was also the author of a military formula for three world wars that would advance the world government agenda to its final stage in the 21st century. World War I, said Pike, must be engineered to overthrow the Tsars of Russia and make Russia a fortress of atheistic communism. World War II must be engineered to destroy Nazism, strengthen political Zionism, and create a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. World War III must exploit the conflicts between the Zionist state of Israel and the Islamic states so that they mutually destroy each other. Divided and exhausted by war, the masses will receive the light of Lucifer brought finally out into the open. Albert Pike's vision for World War III is now taking shape in the Middle East, where the engineered conflicts between the Zionist state of Israel and the Islamic nations are coming to a head. Proof of a world government conspiracy is uncovered on our Seeing is Believing tour of five U.S. cities, starting with Denver, Colorado. Denver, Colorado is home to America's largest airport called the Denver New World Airport. The airport was built by Freemasons in 1995 and features a Freemasonic dedication capstone in the atrium. A time capsule is buried underneath the stone to be opened in the year 2094. The New World Denver Airport has a swastika-shaped runway. There is reportedly a deep underground military base beneath the airport, with miles and miles of secret subterranean tunnels connected to a large network of underground cities. As passengers drive up to the main airport terminal, they are greeted by a sinister-looking 32-foot-high fiberglass blue stallion, with veins popping out of its body and demonic eyes that glow bright red. Not exactly a calming influence for travelers who are already spooked about getting on a plane. The sculpture is believed to symbolize the pale horse of the apocalypse mentioned in the Bible, whose name is Death. The sculptor, Luis Jimenez, was killed by the horse when a chunk of the sculpture broke loose and came crashing down on him. Locals call the horse Blucifer. Inside the airport, travelers hurry past grotesque gargoyles in suitcases that leer down at them and morbid apocalyptic murals that line the airport walls at the main gate. Four panels of giant-sized wall murals in the baggage claim area tell a terrifying and prophetic story in pictures of how humanity's future is going to unfold. The first mural reveals a horrific Darth Vader-like figure wearing a Nazi general uniform and a gas mask. The gas mask indicates that the next war will use depopulating biological or chemical agents. The white dove that he is killing symbolizes peace. On the right are destroyed buildings reminiscent of the Twin Towers. The Nazi general scimitar's sword has been swished through the air, leaving behind a rainbow chemtrail that poisons the air and ethnic population below it. On the left is an endless line of weeping women refugees holding dead babies. There is no trace whatsoever of violence to the dead children, who appear to have died from the deadly gas of the toxic rainbow. Why are there no men present? Presumably, they have all been killed. The Nazi general Scimitar's sword that destroys peace is a symbol used by the Shriners, who are Freemasons. Freemasonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. Outwardly, it is a friendly, charitable organization that conceals an inner brotherhood of the 33rd degree elect. The next airport mural shows a forest and a city in flames. The world's endangered animals and plants are extinct. Buffaloes, whales, leopards, elephants, and sea turtles. The sickly haze and leaping flames suggest a nuclear or biochemical devastation. Children are the only survivors, and they are weeping over three open caskets of an African girl on the left, a native girl in the center, and a white Judeo-Christian girl on the right. They represent the death of the old black, red, and white root races to make way for the new world race. The dead white girl in the coffin holds a Bible and a yellow Juden star, which was used by the Nazis to identify Jews. It symbolizes the death of Judeo-Christian beliefs. Another child holds a Mayan tablet depicting the end of the Mayan calendar and the end of the world as we know it. In the third mural, the apocalyptic war has ended. Children of all nations are joyfully giving up their nation's sovereignty to the blonde-haired, blue-eyed German boy at the center. They are all turning over their weapons wrapped in their country's national flag to the German boy. The Bavarian jacket leaves no doubt whatsoever that the blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy is German. He symbolizes the Bavarian Illuminati. With an iron fist, the German boy destroys the weapons of war symbolized by the Nazi general's sword. The German boy uses a hammer, which symbolizes the hammer and sickle of communism. In the foreground, the Nazi general is dead, with doves of peace perched on his corpse. The German boy symbolizes a world leader and savior who brings peace through communism to a devastated world. Who is this boy that the world gives up their flags and weapons to? We know he is German, with blonde hair and blue eyes, like Prince William, who posed as a boy for this Papua New Guinea stamp. Prince William's father is the son of Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth, whose surnames were changed to cover up their German identities. Prince William's mother, Diana, was allegedly the daughter of James Goldsmith, a German Jew. In the fourth mural, the earth is restored, including the endangered species, the land and water. This future world is populated not by adults, but by parentless children. What happened to the adults? The children are in a dance line that is led by the Scottish boy, who symbolizes Scottish Rite Freemasonry. Also, on the far left, is an African woman carrying a snake banner. The parentless children of the world are celebrating the new world religion as they gather around and touch the light of Lucifer, who appears as a genetically engineered plant. The plant is a floral version of the colorful bird known as the Quetzalcoatl, or feathered serpent. It is symbolically inseparable from the morning star and Lucifer. The main theme of the Denver New World Airport murals is an apocalypse, with massive depopulation, extinction of species, the death of Judeo-Christian beliefs, and the birth of one world government, one world ruler, and one world religion. The next stop on our Seeing is Believing tour is Charlotte, North Carolina, where the headquarters of America's largest bank is located, the Bank of America. Here we find more eerie, bone-chilling paintings describing the apocalyptic story of humanity's future in pictures. Three prophetic frescoes are prominently displayed in the Bank of America's main lobby. Like the Denver murals, they tell a symbolic story which is understood by those in the know. In the first mural, The central figure is a blue-eyed, blonde-haired German boy wearing a Nazi overcoat, clicking his heels together and standing at attention on the checkerboard floor that is a classic symbol of Freemasonry. Who is he? He is the same boy found in the Denver Airport mural, but he is older in this continuation mural. Notice the phallic hand gesture in the comparison photo of the young, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Prince William. Similarly, the boy in the mural has a subliminal erect phallus on his Nazi overcoat, symbolizing power. By erasing the boy's right arm, it becomes clear that the flames of the burning bush are shaped like a hand, and the bush itself is shaped like an arm that is positioned at the boy's shoulder. It now becomes obvious that the German boy is making a straight-arm Nazi salute. Prince William's Knight of the Garter crest is a gold lion. The image of the gold lion is subliminally embedded into the blonde hair of the German boy in the mural. Notice the Egyptian pyramid and black sun behind him. The second fresco in the Bank of America's lobby is an apocalyptic concentration camp where resistors are incarcerated. In the background, industrial burning suggests a crematorium. The back and side wall are strung with barbed wire. Hazmat Marines carrying rifles are seen in the crowd with their Nazi gold eagle and flags. Notice the person wearing the white hazard protection gear. The hazard protection gear symbolizes a pandemic, biochemical, or nuclear warfare. This is the same apocalyptic theme found in the Denver mural, in which the Nazi general is wearing a gas mask. Overhead, the elite are hovering and celebrating like gods, circling free and naked in their wealth and power. They are energized by the chaos below, where the world population is trapped in their net. All races and creeds are caught in the net of riots and protests, including a Catholic bishop, a nun, and a handcuffed man. The protest signs are blank, implying they have no voice. The street signs are also blank, implying there is nowhere to go. The last fresco has a mission accomplished theme. It illustrates the post-apocalyptic rebuilding era that creates order out of chaos. The red dragon in human form is etched into the hillside at the top of the fresco. He sleeps peacefully while the miners serve him. These miners are a reminder of the internationally televised Chilean mine disaster and rescue in 2010. 33 miners were rescued in a ceremonial raising of the phoenix. The ritual was an announcement to 33rd degree Masons that Lucifer is rising. The date of the rescue ritual was October 13, 2010, which is 13-10-10. 13-10-10 adds up to 33. Where did the Chilean president travel to the day after the rescue ritual? Buckingham Palace. He personally delivered a mine rock to the Queen that had been raised from the mine as a symbol of the risen phoenix.
This president has met the Queen at London's Buckingham Palace.
I've got a gift for you. This is a piece of rock that was brought by a miner.
Sebastian Pinera presented the monarch with a souvenir from the San Jose mine where 33 of his countrymen were trapped for 69 days. Mr. Pinera, who was given 33 bottles of real ale by David Cameron, said the rock was brought up by the second miner to be rescued.
The prophetic murals that are featured at America's largest airport and America's largest bank express a New World Order agenda that is hidden in plain sight. The giant images on display for all to see are designed to be understood only by a few. The commission murals share common themes: an apocalypse, a New World Order, and a central figure who is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed German boy. The next stop on our Seeing is Believing tour is Ellerton, Georgia.
Next, we turn to the town of Ellerton, Georgia, the granite capital of the world. Ellerton is famous for its production of tombstones, exporting some 250,000 tombstones every year. Oddly enough, the town that makes a living through death is also the home of what some consider the most threatening monument in America. A monument that some believe is a symbol for the coming Holocaust, promoting a depopulation effort at a massive scale.
It was back in 1979 when a stranger came to Ellerton, Georgia. Now, Ellerton, Georgia is on the eastern part of Georgia, very close to the South Carolina border. And this stranger said that he was part of a secret group, and they wanted to build a great granite monument.
This was done by a guy, we have a pseudonym, came in, paid cash, had this company set these things up in 1980, called himself R.C. Christian, but that's not his real name. It says it right on the stones, a pseudonym.
Nobody knows his real name, because that isn't his real name. Nobody knows who put the money up other than this fictional individual. Nobody knows what secret group he represents. Of course, Ellerton mines granite. They make tombstones there, and they have the facilities to mine the granite. But he gave very, very specific directions as to how this was to be built, so that it would always be aligned in certain ways, so you'd always be able to see the North Star, so it would be aligned with the moon and with the various phases of the sun. And very, very similar to the Stonehenge that they have in England. So the Stonehenge was a druidic monument. This was to be the American Stonehenge, or it's known as the Georgia Guidestones. And on each one of the Guidestones is this message in a different language, actually eight different languages. Are the Ten Commandments that come from the dark side. And the first one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, which doesn't sound too bad until you realize that we've got over 6 billion people in the world. And if we're going to maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, we're going to have to kill off about 90% or more of the world's population.
Like the Masonic Dedication Stone at Denver Airport, which has a time capsule buried beneath it, the Georgia Guidestones also feature a capstone with a time capsule buried beneath it. New York City is the next stop on our Seeing is Believing tour. The world's largest cathedral is a New York City landmark called St. John the Divine. It was built with funding from the Grand Master of the Masons of the State of New York. Using the art style of the grotesque, this sculpture next to the cathedral features sun worship, bizarre mythical creatures, and the upside-down head of Satan. There is a John Lennon quote that says, "One day the world will live as one." On the western facade of the cathedral, stonemasons have sculpted a chilling depiction of the collapse of the Twin Towers and the destruction of New York City and its landmarks. This scene was created in 1997, 4 years before the destruction of the Twin Towers on 9/11. Other recognizable skyscrapers are the Chrysler Building and the Citigroup Center. The cathedral's pillar on the left shows the Brooklyn Bridge crumbling, cars and buses falling into the churning waters, and the Statue of Liberty sinking. Beneath this horrifying prophecy is the New York Stock Exchange, with street people selling all around it. The pillar on the right depicts the four horsemen of the apocalypse, riding white, red, black, and pale horses that symbolize conquest, war, famine, and death. Another pillar depicts the birth of the Antichrist, who is surrounded by mummies. Below the birth is a lamb with its legs tied. The book of Revelation refers to the Antichrist as the beast coming up out of the earth and having two horns like a lamb. Right below the tied lamb is a spiral vortex symbolizing a change of consciousness. Below it are people worshiping the energy vortex of the Antichrist figure. The cathedral pillar on the left is the Jewish Kabbalah's Tree of Life. The Kabbalah is linked to the occult practices and symbolism of Freemasonry. Standing above the Kabbalistic tree of life is a robed man, pictured on the right. Only one eye is exposed, which symbolizes the satanic all-seeing eye. Our second stop in New York City is the United Nations headquarters, which was built in 1945 and financed largely by John D. Rockefeller. Inside UN headquarters is an ominous meditation room. The custodian of the meditation room is Lucis Trust Company. At one time, the Lucis Trust was located at 666 United Nations Plaza and was formally named Lucifer Publishing Company. The Rockefeller-funded UN meditation room is 33 feet long and 18 feet wide. 18 feet is 6 plus 6 plus 6. The small, dimly lit, windowless room was built in the shape of a pyramid that is laying on its side. At the center of the room is a 4-foot-high, black, casket-shaped stone slab which weighs 6.5 tons. And is extremely magnetic and rests on a concrete pillar. The pillar descends beneath the floor into the bedrock and taps into the Earth's hyperdimensional energies to induce a state of altered consciousness. Not far from the meditation room is the United Nations Security Council chamber. This is the emergency room of the UN, where the world leaders meet when there is a threat to peace. They decide the fate of nations. Even though Israel has over 200 uninspected nuclear weapons and has violated dozens of resolutions, no sanctions are ever imposed because of the United States' veto powers. Notice the giant mural that towers over the Security Council room. The central focus of the UN mural is the phoenix bird that has risen. The phoenix bird is a symbol of Lucifer. Egyptians believed that the phoenix symbolized a god who rose to heaven in the form of a morning star like Lucifer after his fire immolation of death and rebirth. Notice that the phoenix bird is not standing above his own ashes. He is standing above his old skin. Like a snake, he has shed his old skin and is revealing himself as God at the center of the mural. At the top left, there is a church steeple without a cross. The missing cross symbolizes the death of Christianity. Below, a woman receives the rays of the sun god while the man in front of her plays Pan's flute. To their right are two pyramid symbols and people joined together by a long blue serpent-like cloth. Below the risen phoenix, a sword is driven through a dragon beast. This represents the killing of old beliefs and religions that depicted Lucifer as a beast. The New World religion worships him as beautiful. Behind the phoenix, the ghostly figures of the walking dead are stepping into a void. They symbolize depopulation. On the right panel, the pale horse from the Book of Revelation is the bringer of death to humanity through weapons, hunger, and disease. The man is releasing him. The chained black man represents slavery, while the top panel of the mural shows a technologically advanced white race who control industry, art, and science. In this post-apocalyptic mural, the military man standing on the tail of the beast represents worldwide military power. He tips his helmet to the elite, who are climbing out from underground cities where they safely hid from the apocalypse. In the main oval panel above the phoenix bird, a woman is holding flowers. She is the bride in a wedding ceremony. Who are these newlyweds that are kneeling submissively beneath the serpent in the overhead tree? Could the newlyweds symbolize William and Kate? The serpent in human form is tempting the little girl Eve, who accepts the apple. On the right side of the top panel, a reptilian green creature with scaly skin is dancing with a naked woman while musicians entertain him. The general message of the UN's Phoenix Rising mural is that humanity is stepping into a new luciferic reality. Beneath this disturbingly prophetic mural, world leaders make global decisions that affect the lives of nearly 7 billion people. What's hard for most people to grasp is that our elected government leaders are involved in an apocalyptic scheme to enslave the masses under a world government dictatorship. How do these leaders sleep at night? How do they live with themselves? The answer can be found at the last stop on our Seeing is Believing tour, the Bohemian Grove Club in Monterio, California. It's an elite retreat for high-ranking politicians, billionaire banksters, businessmen, and Hollywood executives. What's the attraction? 2 weeks of partying, druid worship, and child sacrifice rituals. Members include George Bush Jr. and Sr., Newt Gingrich, Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney, Alan Greenspan, and the list goes on. One thing is certain. These men don't believe in heaven and an afterlife for good behavior. They dress in long robes and gather before a 40-foot stone owl of the god Molech, where they conduct a mock child sacrifice ritual. It's called the cremation of care ritual to purge members of their guilt. The ritual symbolically burns up their cares and clears their conscience of the diabolical crimes they have committed against humanity. Adolf Hitler has a competitor for the title of the most evil man in human history. His competitor's name is Sabbatai Zevi. Sabbatai Zevi declared himself to be the Jewish Messiah in the year 1666. This false Messiah led the largest Messiah movement in Jewish history and attracted more than half the population of European Jews. How did he do it? By promising to return the Jews to their ancestral homeland in Palestine. Sabbatai Zevi made everything that was holy unholy. He rejected the rules of the Jewish holy books and every standard of Jewish decency. There would be no more guilt or sin or right or wrong, no more sexual taboos, no more Ten Commandments, no more fasting. Instead, there would be feasting. Sabbatai Zevi's immoral leadership finally fell from grace when the Sultan of Turkey threatened him with torture unless he converted to Islam. Sabbatai converted to Islam, but he brought his infectious evil theology with him. One century later, Jacob Frank proclaimed himself to be the reincarnation of Sabbatai Zevi and the living Messiah for all Jews. Not even Sabbatai Zevi was as evil as Jacob Frank and his disciples. Jacob Frank rejected traditional Judaism. He reversed the truth and told his followers, since we can't all be saints, let's all be sinners. The best way to imitate God, said Frank, is to cross every boundary, transgress every taboo, and mix, as God did, the sacred with the profane. Orgies, incest, rape, and sexual intercourse with children, including sodomy on young boys, were no longer sinful. In 1773, Jacob Frank traveled to Frankfurt, Germany, the birthplace of the Illuminati. That's where he formed an unholy alliance with Adam Weishaupt and Mayor Amschel Rothschild's banking dynasty. The ambition of the Rothschild dynasty was to win control of the world's gold, central banks, and wealth. The Rothschilds sent John Jacob Astor, Jacob Schiff, and Paul Warburg to America where the influence, the privatization of the Federal Reserve banking system, and the dismantling of the American Constitution. The goal of Weishaupt and the Jesuits was to take control of the Vatican and its hierarchy of Catholic clergy. Weishaupt formed the Order of the Illuminati and infiltrated the Freemasonic lodges with his doctrine until every Masonic lodge in every nation accepted it. The Frankist goal was the destruction and replacement of Jewish ethics with a satanic religion based on the exact opposite of Jewish teachings. When this unholy alliance of conscienceless men was seeded, a cancerous war against humanity erupted. With Rothschild financing, Jacob Frank became fabulously wealthy and was put in charge of spreading a Luciferian theology that would be the hidden hand behind future wars and revolutions. Jacob Frank's followers were called Sabbatean Frankists. They practiced witchcraft and occult rituals, including animal and human sacrifices. Lucifer, they declared, was the true God. The Sabbatean Frankists expanded their movement by masquerading as converts to other religions. They converted to Catholicism and to Islam, where they embedded themselves and spread their Luciferian infection as closeted crypto-Jews. The Frankists traded their wives and daughters with members and with powerful non-members who they needed to seduce into their cult. Jewish professor Gershon Scholem called Jacob Frank one of the most frightening men in Jewish history. By 1776, Orthodox Jewish rabbis and leaders rejected Jacob Frank and the pagan invasion of evil that took hold in 18th century Europe. They declared Jacob Frank and his Luciferian followers to be heretics and denounced Kabbalism as a rejection of the Jewish faith. When Jacob Frank died in 1791, his daughter Eva Frank and his sons Joseph Frank and Rochus Frank led the Frankist court in Offenbach, Germany. Jacob Frank's son Rochus Frank reversed his name and was known in Europe as Frank Roche. Some genealogists believe that the surname Roche in Princess Diana's family tree originates with Jacob Frank's son, Frank Roche. Jewish author and historian Dr. Henry Macau has thoroughly researched the Sabbatean Frankist movement.
The Sabbatean Frankists were out and out Satanists. They believe that they acted, defy any kind of natural morality, defy any kind of natural law, defy God, and they actually indulge in every kind of depravity as a form of worship, because they worship Satan. And they promoted promiscuity, and that's where our promiscuity today comes from. It's 200 or 300 years old. There's nothing new or avant-garde about it. They promoted incest. They promoted pedophilia and every kind of sexual depravity.
Rabbi Wolf Gunther Plott is the former president of the Canadian Jewish Congress. He claims that Sabbatean Frankists are false Zionist Jews who reject traditional Judaism. The Sabbatean Frankists were behind Nazi Germany's Holocaust and World War II, which was engineered to create the State of Israel. Today, hundreds of thousands of Jews in Israel are anti-Zionist Jews who have been protesting on Rothschild Boulevard in upscale Tel Aviv. Anti-Zionist Jews are burning the flag of Israel to protest the Zionist violence and genocide and the injustices. Why don't we see this on television? The authentic Jews condemn the illegal Jewish settlements and the forced creation of the State of Israel.
My late father was in Auschwitz concentration camp. My late mother was in Maidanek concentration camp. Every single member of my family on both sides was exterminated. Both of my parents were in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And it's precisely and exactly because of the lessons my parents taught me and my two siblings that I will not be silent when Israel commits its crimes against the Palestinians. And I consider nothing more despicable than to use their suffering and their martyrdom to try to justify the torture, the brutalization, the demolition of homes that Israel daily commits against the Palestinians. So I refuse any longer to be intimidated or browbeaten by the tears. If you had any heart in you, you would be crying for the Palestinians, not for what she's done.
This is a drawing by a Palestinian child who has experienced the Palestinian Holocaust that is taking place in Israel right now.
It's not a religious conflict. That's a Zionist ploy of accusing everybody of being anti-Semitic. You want peace? You want to have a conference here of peace? Step back and look and read the facts. Not the facts that have been misconstrued by the Zionist propaganda. The facts that are realities. Tell me what man the Jews did not live in harmony with the Muslims. In Iran, we have over 25,000 Jews there, thank God. Why? Because this is not a religious conflict. It's purely because of a political movement, a relatively new movement, which is antithetical, contradictory to the Jewish religion of thousands of years. Judaism is spirituality, a religion of compassion to emulate God. Zionism has been created 100 years ago by atheists, people who abhorred religion, who wanted to transform Judaism from religion to nationality, to a purely materialistic base, godless in its essence. That is not Judaism, and they have no right to use the name of Israel. They've usurped our name, they've stolen our symbols, and they've stolen our identity. And they are causing death and destruction, year in and year out, for over 50 years. Death and bloodshed has not stopped because of a pure ideological belief called Zionism. They sacrifice on their idol bodies, human beings, hearts, souls. They rent, they've destructed houses, they've destructed people's lives. What can we do about this? Let's step back and think. There is a solution, with God's help. If we would put away the politics, then we could know that we've been living and coexisting together. We must profusely apologize to the Muslims, to the Arabs, what has been done to them.
America's Zionist-owned media falsely reported that Iran's president Ahmadinejad threatened to wipe Israel off the map. This was a mistranslation. What the president of Iran really said is that Israel is occupying Palestine and has no legitimacy on the world map. Traditional Torah Jews and rabbis agree with him. There is speculation that the revolutionary document called the Protocols of Zion is a secret Sabbatean Francus document. This document embodies 24 protocols which map out a detailed Zionist plan for global control. The protocols, written in the late 1700s, describe in precise detail the world domination plan that is unfolding today. Rabbi Marvin Antelman charges that the world today is ruled by a Sabbatean Francus satanic cult that has conspired with the Illuminati to destroy all religions and fuse all nations into one. Today, royals, politicians, banksters, and businessmen form the inner circle of the Sabbatean Frankist elite. They live secret, two-faced lives, sometimes posing as religious Jews or Christians or Islamists. Modern Zionism is rooted in the unholy alliance of Frank, Weishaupt, and Rothschild. It has infiltrated world religions, taken over Freemasonry, engineered wars and revolutions, and turned nations and citizens into their debt slaves worldwide. Unfortunately, Muslims, Christians, and Jews do not recognize their common enemy, because that enemy is invisible. It hides within their own religions. The enemy also hides within the activist community. It finances big-budget documentaries and movements. The end game is to sell a divisive, anti-capitalist, atheistic message and deliver trusting followers right into the lap of a communist New World Order. Today, the bloodlines of this unholy alliance are in the final stages of establishing one world religion, one world government, and one world ruler. The Windsor Royals are at the controls of this web of deceit. It is a known fact that Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati, took refuge and got assistance from the German Saxe-Coburg-Gotha royal family. The Saxe-Coburg-Gothas changed their German name to Windsor. The Windsor's public image is a facade to hide the cesspool from which they operate behind the scenes. Their power and control cascades out of Buckingham Palace to the elite bloodlines who run world affairs. The official address for the Queen and Buckingham Palace is London. Not London, England, just London. Why? Because London is a corporation. Like Vatican City, which is not part of Rome or Italy, the inner city of London is not part of London, or of England, or of the United Kingdom, or of any nation. Beneath Buckingham Palace is a private underground subway system. The royal tube tunnels provide the monarch with a speedy getaway during a crisis or insurrection. These secret tube tunnels connect the Queen to Heathrow Airport, her castles, the Kew Whitehall Citadel, the Pindar nuclear bunker, and her Prime Minister at 10 Downing Street. Years ago, the Book of Revelation predicted that Satan would one day rise up from his ungodly abyss and take possession of an earthly prince. A one-world empire and ruler has been in the planning stages for thousands of years. The Egyptians intentionally left the Great Pyramid of Giza unfinished until such time as their sun god achieves absolute power over the earth realm. The Great Pyramid is waiting to be crowned with a capstone. Every U.S. dollar bill displays the unfinished Egyptian pyramid. The capstone is unattached and floating above it, and symbolizes the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. Once the capstone is finally attached to the Great Pyramid, it will symbolize the crowning of the New World Order and the completion of Luciferic ascension. The crowning of the Great Pyramid, together with the crowning of Prince William, is fast approaching. 2012 is the year of the dragon and the year of the Summer Olympic Games in London. In Roman numerals, it is the XXX Olympiad, or 30th Olympiad. 2012 marks Prince William's 30th birthday, which is also XXX in Roman numerals. X is the 24th letter of the English alphabet. In numerology, 24 is 2 plus 4 equals 6. XXX is 2 plus 4, and 2 plus 4, and 2 plus 4 equals 666. The Olympic Stadium floodlights were designed as pyramids. This is the ultimate form of Illuminati symbolism, since the all-seeing eye capstones illuminate the entire stadium. Strangely, the Olympic Village site was designed with biblical and mystical road names. Even stranger are the 2012 one-eyed Olympic mascots, which are all-seeing eye symbols. The eye of each mascot is actually a camera that allows the little demons to see all and record all. Look closely at the logos of the Olympic corporate sponsors. Sun pyramids, pentagrams, all-seeing eyes. These corporate luciferic logos are everywhere, and they are not harmless. Symbols vibrate and project the energy of what they symbolize.
Open your mind. Open your mind. Oh. Open your mind. Oh. Open your mind. Oh. Open your mind. Oh.
If you want to know the identity of the men who rule the world from the shadows, all you have to do is unscramble the puzzle pieces of the 2012 Olympic Games logo. Yes, many have commented that it looks like a distorted swastika. But if you unscramble the five puzzle pieces, you will probably make the intended mistake of thinking the logo is the numbers 2012, which is what you're supposed to think. But look again. The unscrambled logo spells the word Zion, and to make no mistake about it, the Zionist designer dotted the I. The kleptocracy of royals, banksters, and corporate criminals have painted a bleak future for humanity with their apocalyptic movies, murals, and monuments. In his book, Antichrist in a Cup of Tea, Tim Cohen states that the key leadership of the New World Order agenda is the House of Windsor in London. The Windsors are the real axis of evil that is driving world events, says Cohen. Some believe the Vatican is in charge, but look at the design of the Vatican from overhead. It is shaped like a keyhole, and inside that keyhole is the British flag and its symbolic double-cross design. The game plan formula for the New World Order is a simple one. Order out of chaos. Create global chaos by engineering and financing both sides of wars, revolutions, and movements. Then create order by offering the desperate, war-weary world a peaceful solution. Enter the handsome, charming peacemaker Prince William, who turns 33 in 2015. 33 is the most revered and sacred number in Freemasonry. 33 is also the age of Jesus when he was allegedly resurrected. By 2015, the desperate, war-torn world will be ready to embrace a leader with a global peace plan and a message of hope. William will be a counterfeit messiah. His message of hope will deliver a forced peace by disarming the world of its most devastating weapons of war. He will rule the world with his one world army from an eternal throne in Jerusalem. The throne and temple have already been designed. Just like the symbols that are hidden in corporate logos, the 1% that rule the 1% that rule the 99% hide in plain sight. They hide by reigning instead of ruling, and they hide behind the walls of one of the world's biggest tourist attractions. Over the centuries, we have fought and died by the millions to enrich these royal lowlifes. We have worshipped them, labored for them, paid taxes to them, carried their flags, sung their anthems, and we have even wiped their butts for them. If we want to save our planet, we need to get up off our knees right now while there is still a window of opportunity. What does it mean to get up off our knees? It means refusing to stand at attention and sing national anthems about bombs bursting in air, or about a noble and gracious queen or king who is neither noble nor gracious. It means not voting in the corrupt electoral system. A vote for the lesser of two evils is still a vote for evil. It means not wearing corporate logos and imitating idiot gestures that vibrate Luciferic energy. It means giving up our need to worship gods, messiahs, saviors, aliens, gurus, politicians, and rock stars. When we worship, we give our power away. It means not supporting troops that fight and kill and die in unjust wars to enrich the filthy rich. It means withholding our tax dollars that sponsor the bankster mafia, their puppet politicians, and their genocidal wars. It means taking our money out of the bankster-owned banks and their rigged stock market casinos, then finding an alternative. It means freeing ourselves from heart-numbing addictions to drugs, sexploitation, money, and violence, and rediscovering our natural innocence. It means canceling our cable TV and the toxic propaganda that is infecting our souls. And most important of all, it means fearlessly rising up and deposing humanity's common enemy that hides in plain sight.
The British Empire will last for... The British Empire will last for 1,000 years.